Conference record has joined the conference.
All right, well, thanks for joining us for tonight's topical call on the extended school year. We have a smaller group this evening, but we're going to record this and we're going to apply it to the website so people can listen to it later. Kathy Harstead has blessed us again with coming to us with some great information on schools. And so we're just going to go move ahead with our topical call on the extended school year, kind of a power review. So, Kathy, without further ado, thanks so much again for agreeing to do this with us. And, Beth, take it away.
Okay, I will. I just want you to know, Denise, that I did hear one other beep just after you excused yourself to start the recording. So there might be one other person who joined us.
Great.
Okay. All right. Well, let's start with Module 1, which is what are ESY services? And I think it's important for us as parents to know what they are and what they're not. Sometimes we can know more about something by knowing what it's not. IEP meetings can get complicated, and I think it helps ground us if we have a really clear understanding of what it is we're talking about. So what are ESY services? They would be special education services or related services that are uniquely designed to provide FAPE to eligible students with disabilities in an extended school year. And that's where the acronym ESY stands for, extended school year. So what makes them unique is that the services are provided beyond the normal school year. So that can be either more days than a typical student would attend or more hours. So ESY could be provided over the summer, over a Christmas break, or later in the day or earlier than the day. Now, just because it could be provided at those times doesn't mean that it will be provided. We'll talk more about that when we talk about how does the team justify whether ESY services are needed or not. But it can and it has included all of those kinds of things. One of the first things I want to talk to you about tonight is an answer to the question, is ESY like summer school? Because sometimes parents of children with special needs read about ESY, and they're trying to figure out if their child is eligible for it or if they need it. And they're talking with the team and making a case for that. And the local school district will suggest to the parent that they just enroll their child in summer school. So parents can choose whether or not they want to do that, but we need to understand if ESY and summer school are the same thing. And the answer to the question is no, not really. Summer school is designed for all students, and during summer school, we teach new skills. Our goal is to help students catch on and catch up. Maybe they missed a lot of school during the year, or maybe they're coming in from a different school and they're behind a grade level. Maybe they had a reading or a math problem during the year, so they struggled some and got behind, and they started to do better, but we just need that extra time to help them catch up. ESY is designed not for all students, but for students with disabilities. And ESY is supposed to teach previously learned skills to prevent students from falling further behind. And that's a common misunderstanding. A lot of parents think if they can enroll their kids in school for ESY during the summer, that they'll be able to work on skills to help close that gap. But ESY was not designed to do that, and so the basis for it in IDEA does not support that. Now, having said that, sometimes in an ESY program, what you'll get is you'll get a teacher or an administrator who tries to do both. But strictly speaking, ESY is designed to teach previously learned skills to prevent students from falling further behind. So why would anyone want ESY services? How does it help? Well, it helps students retain skills that were previously learned or fully master recently learned or recently introduced skills so that they don't lose time relearning those skills after a break or they don't miss a unique window of opportunity. And we'll see if later in the presentation we'll try to give you some examples. So why couldn't we do this kind of working on previously learned skills in summer school? In order to get ESY services, remember at the very beginning of the presentation I said that ESY has to be special education services or related services. So that means you need skilled instructors who are familiar with the IEP, who can provide the specialized instruction, because if you don't need a specialized instruction for a student in order for them to retain skills, then you really don't need ESY, as well as handle the adaptations and modifications that a student might need or the behavior intervention plan that a student might need. And typically, a summer school instructor might not be prepared to provide those services. Now, districts sometimes have to get creative when they hire people to cover an ESY program. So they may try to combine staff or find people who could do both. So I'm not saying you'll never find a special education teacher teaching summer school, but usually for ESY, you must have that highly qualified instructor. Another question that we get asked a lot is, why don't we just create year-round learning opportunities? A lot of parents would really benefit from that. For one thing, it can be very difficult to find full-day child care in the summer. And often our children do develop a gap between what they know and can do and the other students at their grade level. And so it would be beneficial if not only we could help them retain skills, but we could help them learn new ones or try to actively close that gap. But while that could be beneficial, it's not required under the law, and if we tried to do that for every single student, it would be very expensive. Right now, IDEA is not fully funded by Congress, and so that would probably overwhelm the resources of the local school system. We as parents have an opportunity to lobby for something like that in terms of, at some point, IDEA, the special ed law that special education services are based on, will be reauthorized. And we can certainly send in comments or try to shape ESY into something more than it is. But there's no basis for that in the law right now. So when we try to do that right now, within our local school systems, we're actually asking them to do something that they're not required to do. One of the questions that we get asked is, will ESY help a student make adequate yearly progress? And there's a mixed answer to that. When we are talking about adequate yearly progress, we're looking at the performance of the students, what they know and what they can do, and the rate of progress. In other words, if you're in second grade or fifth grade or whatever grade your child is in, you need to make as much progress to achieve all of the standards that are set for that grade level for that year. But when we are talking about ESY, we're not just thinking about adequate yearly progress. We're also thinking about two other important terms that you will hear a lot in discussions within the IEP team. And those two terms are specifically mentioned in the law. They are regression and recoupment. Some students let's just say for some of us, our brains do not work optimally 100% of the time. And so have you ever, like, learned something or been shown how to do something and then you tried it and you did it? And the next day, you go back to do it again, but it's kind of new to you, and all of a sudden you can't remember how you did that, and you need a little help with that. Well, for students who need specialized instruction, that is more often the case than for typical students. And so they can actually lose ground over a break of time because maybe the skills they were being introduced to are just emerging for them, or they don't have all the prerequisite skills, so they didn't really master it or get a real solid grip on that before the year ended or the break came. And so in addition to that, some students experience traumatic brain injury or seizure disorders or other neurological complications that can make it, that can result in an actual regression where they go backwards and they start losing skills. So those skills have to be retaught. And then we have to consider how much time it's going to take for that student to recoup what they had learned before and get back to the point where they were before they started regressing. So when we're talking about ESY, it's really not the adequate yearly progress that we're focused on as much as looking at the regression and the recoupment. And they relate because, of course, if you are regressing and you're taking too long to recoup skills, then you're not going to make adequate yearly progress. Now, all students can potentially regress and recoup and need to recoup. So it's very common for general education teachers to review at the beginning of the year with all students. So that alone does not mean that someone's going to be eligible for extended school year services. But if the amount of time needed to recoup is greater than what would be satisfactory for that student, then the team really needs to start looking at that. So just one more look at ESY versus summer school. So kids in the summer school and kids getting ESY in the summer may go to the same school at the same time. They may spend time together each day or take part in joint activities. But remember, there's a difference between teaching familiar skills versus teaching new skills. And we ask ourselves, if time permits, can't we do both? Why isn't catching up as important as not falling further behind? Isn't the team supposed to help my child reach his goals? These are all good questions. And we have to keep in mind as parents that ESY was not designed to answer those. ESY was written into IDEA as kind of a minimal service for some critical learning situations to prevent students from losing ground, because if they lose too much ground, we can't really say they're benefiting. And educational benefit is an important key principle in providing students with a free and appropriate public education. But between the time the law was written and today, our expectations for general and special education have increased exponentially, and we are really much more focused on students making adequate yearly progress than we were at the time the law was written. And unfortunately, within IDEA, the support for a more aggressive program isn't really there. I also wanted to talk just for a minute about ESY versus childcare. This is actually came from some comments that we got from parents about an ESY program. So if a student is found eligible for ESY services and you go to observe, in this case the ESY staff, they didn't have the current IEP to follow, the special education teacher that was hired to cover ESY in the summer was not the same as the student's regular special education teacher. And that information has to get passed from one person to another if that's the case. And sometimes it happens that that takes longer than we would like to see. Plus, there was some snapshot information that had been put together to try to orient the new teacher to the student, and the parent found that it was inaccurate, and it was created without a chance to have any input. Then she found that the staff were not trained to use the technology that was part of the IEP or to implement the behavior plan. So at that point, we can't just say that we're giving ESY to a student. We really have to do it. And these would be problems that we would have to work with the local school district to solve if this happened. Because then what is intended to be ESY merely becomes child care, and that's not the goal. So just to recap, ESY is special education and related services, so that could include things like speech therapy, occupational therapy, physical therapy. If the student needs ESY to prevent regression or address recruitment, it's not child care, it's not summer school or respite care, but it is really required for some children to benefit from education. So I put together a little reality check. Does ESY include related services? Yes. Is it the same as summer school? No. It's not intended to teach new skills. It does require highly qualified instructors. It is not intended to provide us with respite care, no matter how desperately I needed it during the summer. It's not true that ESY takes place only in the summer, although there are pressures within school districts that tend to push them in that direction. You would really have to make a case about the recruitment and the regression over a shorter break in order to convince a school district that a student needed ESY during those breaks. And that's pretty difficult to do. It has happened around the country. I'm not really aware of it happening that often in North Dakota. ESY does help students to receive a free and appropriate publication, and it's extremely helpful when students really need it. So that is just kind of the very basics about ESY, and what I'll just do now is I'll pause for a second to see if we have any questions so far, and then if after we deal with any questions, we can go on to the second module and really kind of get into the nitty-gritty about how teams look at ESY and make decisions about ESY. Because my goal for parents is to really know what ESY is and what it's not, to be able to take part in a discussion about ESY, and consider your child's unique needs against what is really provided for in IDEA and hold your own in a discussion about that. Because we bring, as parents, a unique perspective to the planning process, and we're going to think differently about things than educators do. That's why it's a team effort, because we need all the perspectives in order to make good decisions. So I'll stop for a moment. Does anybody have any questions about ESY so far? You've overwhelmed me with your questions. Okay, well, I'll just keep going. All right, so the first thing we need to know is who is eligible for ESY services. And IDEA states that any student with a disability under IDEA must be considered for ESY. So if we have a situation where parents are being told that Students at this level of special ed aren't eligible for ESY, or only students with the most severe disabilities can be getting ESY services. That is not actually true. We must consider as a team whether all students who are students with disabilities who have IEPs, whether they need ESY services. So what are the qualifications? Does your child have to do something to qualify for ESY? They must have an IEP and a team that has decided that it's necessary. So those are the only two factors that have to be present for a student to receive ESY. They must have an IEP or have been found, you know, eligible for special ed services, and the team must have decided that they needed ESY. So it's a big decision for any team to make. So who decides if someone needs ESY? Only the IEP team, which includes the parents, can decide if ESY services are necessary. The student is eligible if the IEP team says they are. So I want to be clear about that. The principal does not decide if a student needs ESY, nor does the parent, nor does the special education director. But the team has to decide. And in cases that have come up in the courts on this principle, if there is evidence that an arbitrary decision was made without a clear team process to make this decision, that's not going to stand, typically. So we need to really value and protect that team decision-making process and to be part of that. So what kind of students with disabilities typically receive ESY services? Only those students whose IEP teams decide that ESY services were necessary for the student to receive a free and appropriate public education. Well, can't all students benefit from ESY? Yes, it would be helpful if we could offer ESY to every student. It could be even beneficial, providing that the services were really providing evidence-based practices for a student. But the question is not would it be helpful or beneficial, but is it essential? Is it necessary? So now we have a couple of stories that I wanted to tell you about two different kiddos, so we can think a little bit or apply some of what I'm seeing to whether a student needs, whether ESY is necessary. So here we have Marilyn. And Marilyn, as you can see or guess from the picture, has some physical challenges. And Marilyn has been learning to read and to spell and to do math. And she's a hard worker. And what we know from working with Marilyn is that when school is done in the spring, her family is going to spend a lot of time with her over the summer. They're going to read books with her every day, several times a day. They're going to practice all the skills that she learned during the year. And Marilyn doesn't forget what she's learned. So even though, as you can see from the picture, she might have some pretty significant support needs, the teachers find that when Marilyn starts up in the fall, she still has pretty much the same vocabulary she had when she left in the spring. She might forget a couple words here and there or a couple concepts here and there, but not many. So in her case, even though she's significantly involved, she may not need ESY for academics. Now, that's not to say that she wouldn't need ESY for some other aspect of her special education services. Now, the second story would be about Ashton. And Ashton is a student who has really struggled to grasp math concepts. And he is a couple years behind his peers. It takes a lot of step-by-step instruction for Ashton to get that. And it takes some really specialized techniques to help him learn math. And although he has a great family and they work with him during the summer and they're supportive, we have learned over time that Ashton loses quite a bit of what he's taught mathematically unless he continues to get that instruction during the summer. So his team has identified the fact that ESY is necessary for him to benefit. So what about my child? Remember that every child is unique. There is no one-size-fits-all answer. And the decision about whether ESY services are necessary is made based on the unique needs of the child. So what information should the team consider in making the decision? And it's really important to know this, both as educators and parents, because it's very easy for us, for me as a parent or me as a special education teacher, to go in that meeting and form a judgment about what's necessary based on instinct and opinion and maybe experience. And while all those things are important to bring to the table and they're all valuable, the decision has to be made based on the unique needs of the child. So that means as a team we want to weigh all relevant information. We want to get information from multiple sources. We want to look at the data on the level and the rate of performance over time. We have to look at any special circumstances, and we have to review that against the state criterion for determining ESY. Now, need is relevant. I could decide that your child doesn't need ESY services, and you could think that they do need ESY services. So once again, we have to consider the data that we have. Can we quantify our opinion based on performance data? Review the unique needs against the criterion and try to reach a consensus on ESY. Part of the rules that we follow in making a decision are federal. The federal rules say that ESY must be made available if a student needs it. It can't be limited by the type of disability that a student has or limited unilaterally. And if the school doesn't have the resources to provide ESY, then the resources must be found. To find as a parent, it would be important if you were considering with your team a decision about ESY, you would want to be familiar with the state guidelines on that. And so I put them into the PowerPoint for you. Go to the DPI. DPI stands for the Department of Public Instruction webpage. You can look at district resources and ask your special education unit or your principal or your child's teacher to provide you with a copy of the district policy on ESY. And you can also turn to us at the Pathfinder Parent Center. And we can review policies with you, or we can help you get your hands on stuff if you're not sure where to go for that. All right. So as the team goes through the decision-making process, that process has to be documented. One thing that you may hear about as parents is something called TyNet. TyNet is an electronic case management system that all the schools in North Dakota use to document the IEP. And within TyNet, there are actually prompts for the team that prompt them to consider ESY for a student and include reminders that they need to be thinking about. And the reason I mention this is some teams actually pull that up during the IEP meeting, project it onto the wall, and fill it out as a team as they're making decisions together. Parents tend to really like that. It's not required, and some teams don't. But it's just a nice resource for teams. Because the special education teachers have to fill that out anyway, and so they actually save time and paperwork. The biggest and most important part of the documentation for a decision about ESY is the team has to be able to come up with the basis for their decision, whether they decided for or against. And that basis for a decision has to arrive out of a team discussion. So if there's no discussion, then a basis that somebody wrote down is just something they wrote down. There needs to be a discussion. And the basis has to really say, we looked at this, we looked at that, we thought about this, we thought about that. We realized this, the data showed that. And so, therefore, the basis for our decision was, and state what that is. And that is a skill in IEP documentation that may or may not be familiar to a teacher, depending on how long they've been doing this. But, you know, it is required in order to justify, as a district, that we would spend the funds on ESY, or to justify as a team why we're not providing ESY. And once we decide that a student is eligible for ESY services, then that becomes part of the IEP process. Can the school say no to ESY? If ESY is in the IEP, the school is required to provide it. But sometimes the IEP team does not agree. They cannot come to an agreement. They've worked at it. They've tried to consider all the data and come up with a basis for a decision, but the team simply doesn't agree. The parent thinks the student should have it. Other members of the team do not agree. The school can say, no, we're not going to provide this, and the parent has a right to due process. For a dispute resolution if that happens. Can I appeal this decision to the school board if I disagree with the decision about ESY? There's nothing in the law that would prevent you from doing that, but there's nothing in IDEA that would obligate you to do that. We try to encourage parents to navigate the system, and complaining to the school board isn't really your good next step. If the team is not able to agree, you certainly could talk after the meeting with the special education director or the building principal, try to make your case again. That would be an intermediate step that you would take before you would go to a school board. So it's important to kind of follow that that chain of command in the process. So just to recap, eligibility for ESY means any student with a disability if the ESY services are necessary to achieve a free and appropriate public education that can only be determined by the team, which includes the parents, based on all relevant information from multiple sources using state criteria based on the unique needs of the student without setting arbitrary limits. And so for our reality check, does that have to include parent input? Absolutely. Can the school just follow local ESY policies for decisions? No, they have to follow the federal and state policies. ESY decisions must be justified in writing, yes. Any student with a disability is qualified for ESY, yes. Any student with a disability will receive ESY, no. ESY decisions can be made by one or two staff who review the criterion and then inform the parents. Well, we looked at your request, we looked at the criterion, and the student is not eligible. No, that does not involve a team discussion where the unique needs of the students are weighed and discussed, the data is looked at, and so forth. We can't just beg the question and say, well, I can tell you right now the student is going to qualify. ESY has to be necessary to help the student receive that free and appropriate public education, and yes, decisions are made after looking at all relevant information. Now, our goal as a parent center is to continue developing the modules on ESY, where we actually put together, very specific case information that we go through in terms of not from a legal advocacy point of view, but rather from a what if you as a team are struggling with this? How do you decide? What can you weigh? What can you think about as a team? You know, our goal is to not take teams right away to some kind of an adversarial place, because we can get there all by ourselves. You don't need help from us to do that. But rather to really support the team in the decision-making process to think about all the variables and try to come together to a good decision. So that's our basic overview start on ESY, and I have done a lot of yakking into a phone with no feedback. So I would really like to hear questions or comments or whatever from anyone on the phone.
Any questions at all?
Any thoughts from you, Deneen, as you were listening to all that?
It was a great refresher, Kathy. I'm so appreciative of you. It was great.
Okay.
Very.
I second that, Kathy. Great presentation. My son is just starting preschool next week, and mm-hmm. So ESY was already mentioned to me, so the presentation was timely for me to know what ESY is all about. So that really helps going into it, knowing that he's eligible, but that doesn't necessarily mean he's going to get it.
Right. Right. He has to need it.
Yep.
Right. Yeah, it has to be considered for him, though. Yeah. And it's important.
Joan.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, that's okay. This is Joan. This was a great refresher for me, too. So thank you.
You're welcome. It's important, too, when you start collecting the data to make a case for ESY, that you start that right away at the beginning of the year. A lot of discussions on ESY don't happen until the spring. But you might not, by the spring, have the data to support your case. So you really want to start looking at that in the fall.
So how would you recommend doing that, like just keeping track of how they're retaining information over breaks, or?
Right. I would be talking to the teacher and saying, okay, where did you start in the instructional process this fall? And what did you have to review, and how much time did that take? Whether we're talking about learning our colors or learning our shapes, or learning our numbers, or specific reading skills or math skills, whatever it is. Because you're going to review at the beginning of the year with all the students. So was that enough for my child? Have they, can you identify anything now, this fall, that they seem to have forgotten over the summer? Or that the teacher from the year before, because it often is a changed teacher, said that they had mastered, but when you did the screening and the testing in the fall, it showed that they hadn't. That is information that's not always readily available to you as a parent, and without it, you can't make the case. It should be readily available to you as a parent because you are an informed member of the IEP team. And if the team can't come up with those kinds of informations, we have a problem for everybody. So we want to be asking good questions as a parent and say, no, we really need to keep an eye on this. I'm not going to press for my kid to get ESY if he doesn't need it, but I want to see the data so we really know as a team when we come to talk about this in the spring. And we can do the same thing by looking at what happens over Christmas break. And I will say that there are some other criterion that we have to look at for ESY besides just regression and recoupment. In fact, the law says that the state or the school can't set a single criteria. So taking advantage of a narrow window of opportunity is another one of the criterion. And sometimes there are just unique circumstances for a student's learning that have to be considered. Most of the teams in North Dakota should have a checklist that they're using from the Department of Public Instruction with some power questions on it that the team can ask itself. And that's a nice guide. But if you don't have data to base a decision on, then you're going to fall back on opinion. And opinion can vary.
That was great.
This might be a little off topic, Kathy, but for like younger kids, my son is 3, and so he's just aging out of early intervention and into preschool. Mm-hmm. How often do you normally meet for the IEP for that young of an age?
Well, IEPs have to be reviewed once a year. So your child right now, if he's just aging out, doesn't have an IEP, has an IFSP. And if he's found eligible for special education services, then they will develop what we call an initial IEP. And then once that's in place, it has to be reviewed annually. It doesn't have to be completely rewritten. Sometimes we can write goals that might take a couple years to achieve. They don't recommend that. They recommend that you kind of look at 1 year at a time. But the goal for the next year might be fairly similar, and then in the third year we might be ready to make a bigger jump. A lot of that really depends on the student and a lot of different variables. But just once a year.
That's what I thought I remember. That's quite a switch because the IFSP, I don't remember if we did it quarterly or twice a year, but it seems like we did that a lot.
Right, and between birth and age 3, there's a lot of rapid developmental changes for many students, even students who have gaps in their learning or neurological challenges or other kinds of developmental differences in how they progress. They're still moving quite rapidly, and I don't find that that automatically magically changes at age 3. But under IDEA, you're only required to do it annually or if needed. So, you know, for me to say the school only has to review that IEP once a year isn't totally accurate. That's the only required period unless it needs to be adjusted more often. So sometimes individual teams will say, okay, well, we need to meet again in 6 months. Or they won't say that. It really depends on the needs of the student. It depends on if we're talking about academic or functional or motor or behavioral or what the issues are. And if you set the thing for a year and you're off and running and the plan's being implemented, sometimes it doesn't all go as planned. It's a real world and we have real kids and sometimes it just doesn't go the way the team thought it would, and so there's a need to get together sooner than a year. We can't then say as a team, oh, well, too late. We already had our meeting for this year. We only have to review this once a year, so we can't meet. If there's a legitimate need to meet, then we have to meet. And you can request that meeting, and so can the teachers.
All good information. We actually did our first initial IEP. We had the meeting, and I was honestly kind of scared of it. And it wasn't bad. It wasn't bad at all. Mm-mm.
No.
Not all that much different than the IFSP, other than there was more people there.
Uh-huh.
It went very well.
And sometimes parents see a difference because the IFSP can also focus on family needs, whereas the IEP tends to be a little more child-centered. But we have some great early childhood specialists in the state, so I'm really glad to hear that your team and you got off to a great start. You're happy with the IEP.
Yep.
See, it's the way we want it to be. That's good. Okay, any other questions? Well,
again, Kathy, thank you so much. You did a great job.
You're welcome. Have a good evening, everybody.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
Bye.
The leader has disconnected. The conference will be terminated in 2 minutes. The leader has disconnected. The conference will now end.